Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to have you with us. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A lot to talk about today. Five Big Ten games on ESPN, but I think Steve Samsel's right when he wrote his media column 2 weeks ago. You can't sacrifice coverage and exposure for dollars because the difference in dollars isn't going to be that great. The difference in dollars is not going to be that great. That doesn't mean you can't have a package that is on FS1. But they have not been able to prove yet how good they are. Doug in Wellsboro. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Doug?
Hey, I really enjoyed your story time with Steve yesterday.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the special moments where we can just go to the archives of the mind.
Sorry, I forgot the music. It wasn't the same without the music.
I did want the music, so I did. Kevin let me down on that.
Sorry.
I did like the Fractured Fairy Tales music. I'll expect it at the end of this bump, but...
Done.
Okay. I did have some follow-up questions, though, that I wanted to know.
Please.
Okay. After it was apparent that Joe wasn't going to get the All-Eastern Conference, why did they focus on the Big Ten? Why wasn't there a move to the ACC? Did Joe just have better connections with the Big Ten? Why was it all on the Big Ten or nothing else?
Well, it was actually Bryce Jordan.
Okay.
And it was Stanley Eikenberry was the chancellor at the University of Illinois. He had been a professor here at Penn State. In fact, I don't know, Doug, if he had risen to the level of dean here. He probably did. And he was at the University of Illinois at the time, and he looked at the landscape, and he thought Penn State would be a great addition because he felt that Penn State fit. So it wasn't a question of Joe Paterno going out and seeking other affiliates. This was all done at the presidential level. It was not done at Joe Paterno's level as a football coach then. And, of course, when he tried to do the Eastern All-Sports Conference, Joe was the athletic director at the time, that two-year window where he was the AD. This was all done by Stanley Eikenberry, Bryce Jordan, and some others at the presidential level. That's what led to the 7-3 vote 25 years ago tomorrow, because the athletic people were upset that they were left out of the process.
The impression was Joe driving that? That Joe, I mean, the impression that always been through the years that Joe kind of pushed for this and then drug the presidents and everybody else along, but this was handled at the presidential level, is the truth?
This was handled at the presidential level, and it was Stanley Eikenberry, who at the time was the head of the what they call the CIC, which is the Big Ten President's Group. He's the one that led the charge on this and talked to Bryce Jordan and got Bryce Jordan to go along with it. Now, Bryce Jordan did talk to Joe about this, and he talked to Jim Tarman about this. And he talked to Jim Tarman as the athletic director, and he talked to Joe only because, let's face it, there are very few people out there that have the big picture view that Joe has. And Joe, I think, understood that because of the markets, Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, Columbus, Cleveland, you know, whatever, that long term it could be very good for Penn State to be involved with this group because of television rights, because television was becoming trickier and trickier, especially at this point Notre Dame had put together its own TV deal with NBC, which was a shock to everybody across the board. Remember, Joe was very instrumental in putting together the College Football Association TV package. Very instrumental. He was right in the thick of it. And they looked around at the landscape, and I think, you know, he thought it would be long-term a good idea. But this was really Bryce Jordan and Stanley Eikenberry.
Why did Minnesota vote against it so bad? Why were they so adamant against it?
Because they were absolutely adamant because of the distance between Minnesota and Penn State. They were absolutely adamant that they did not want to be traveling their teams. In other words, their soccer team, a field hockey team, a baseball team, whatever. Because it's far more expensive for them to do. That's why the Notre Dame thing with the Big East, and now the Notre Dame thing in particular with the ACC. You know how much money they're shelling out to get their teams to these matches, these games? I mean, that's a lot of money, and that's what Minnesota was really mad about. Minnesota was really mad about the fact that they thought the travel distance was just too great and was far too expensive for them.
What do you think? Has it been a positive or not? I mean, I think they kind of they fell into a good situation, or it's worked itself out due to the big money nowadays, you know, in the TV contracts. There's only, you know, like five major conferences left, so in a weird kind of way, it all kind of worked out in a more stable Big Ten. But like you said yesterday, the way Penn State was treated when it first came in, it worked out okay, but we are kind of the ugly stepsister for years, you know, and add on Dave Whitvoet and the other guys, you know, not to mention that stuff.
Absolutely.
What do you think? Has it worked out?
I felt when they did this, and this is back in 1990, and I didn't know, obviously, and nobody did, that Joe would be there another 21 years. I felt like it was post-Joe Paterno insurance, where you look at the stadium and Penn State's winning national championships, Joe's doing going great guns, they're bringing in a lot of money from what they're doing in the stadium, they're bringing in a lot of money from television, they get to keep all their bowl money. But I kept looking at the landscape, and I kept thinking, well, what happens when Joe leaves? And so I always looked at the Big Ten as post-Joe Paterno insurance. And it's turned out to be, I think, exactly that. It just took a long time to get to that point. Because now they're settled with their TV package. You can see Big Ten football every single week, including with Penn State. You can see Big Ten basketball every game with Penn State. There aren't enough wrestling matches on. That part has not been solved. But there's volleyball on with the Big Ten Network and so forth. It's actually, in that area, for fans, it's turned out a lot better, because after football, you had to put together regional networks and had to get stations that were independent to carry games, and you had to cobble that together every single year. Now, the Big Ten Network, as an example, reaches 83% of the homes in the state. And for a fan, that part's great. And I think when you look overall, despite what they did with the bowl money, despite what they did with the absurd censure thing, which is no more than a slap in the wrist, it's just a fancy academic way of saying we slapped you on the wrist. You take that off the table, the Big Ten, I think, has been what Penn State long-term needs.
I agree with you. Of all the conferences, you can't find a more solid, stable conference to be in. So if it had to be, I guess this is the best choice of any of them. So there was really no plan B. I mean, the ACC is always moving around stuff as it is. What else was there? So in a weird kind of way, it all kind of worked itself out as how it should have ended up. You know, they've got the big contracts. They're financially secure. They support all the other sports. So I guess it all worked out in the end.
I think it's worked out in the end really well for Penn State, but it's also worked out really well for the Big Ten, because Penn State gave Jim Delaney an Eastern market and an Eastern football base that included D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York, that allowed him in TV negotiations to get bigger contracts for everybody across. Paterno did was that he changed the attitude in the conference. Bo Schembechler, who struggled in bowl games, as did Woody Hayes, struggled in bowl games, thus struggled to really ever be in the national championship picture, declared that at one point the number one goal for Michigan was to win the Big Ten championship. Well, you and I both know, Doug, that at Penn State, the goal was always to win the national championship. That was the big prize. And for Penn State, the attitude was they want to win the national championship. Oh, and by the way, winning the Big Ten championship along the way is a big deal. It's a step to getting there. Well, eventually that permeated throughout the conference, and you've seen, obviously, what Penn State did in 94. You see what Michigan did in 97, what Ohio State did in 2002 and in 2014. You know, they've been winning national championships and competing for them. And the old Big Ten wasn't like that before Penn State got in.
That's what I was just, I think 94 really opened a lot of eyes to be in the conference that soon and to run through the conference. But it also exposed a lot of things, too. That final vote, a lot of the Big Ten voters voted against
right.
Penn State. So, it made everybody step up their game, but you also saw how they were treated and got no regional support, you know, in the end. So it works both ways.
Absolutely. And there, look, it's tough changing attitudes, as we have seen in recent years. It is tough changing attitudes. And it was tough, I think, for some old guard Big Ten people to watch Penn State go through their conference and beat Ohio State 63-14, to beat Michigan, you know, three of the first 4 years in the conference, and so forth, to lead Iowa 35-0 at halftime. That was not easy for some of them to take. And when you look at what Joe won 24 bowl games in his career, you know, Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler combined for a total of 11 bowl wins. That's it. And people don't realize that.
Right. Joe won the bowl games, and it basically, like we said, he's made everybody step up their games.
Yep.
Hey, I won't keep you on this subject much longer, but I'm so glad now, this is a totally different subject, but I'm so glad that you can now say the name of the transfer student. So.
Oh, yes. I was kidding Kevin about that when I talked to him. And I said, I can finally say your name. He says, you have no idea how relieved I am. He said that I can actually go to class and be a part of what's going on, because he's been just chafing at the bit to get there. And Kevin will be a big help. I mean, he'll be a big help, because now what you're going to have is, while the offensive line will not be great, it's not going to be that. But last year, when you lost Diefenbach, you had Donovan Smith who had started, and you had Angelo Mangiaro who had played, and that was it. At least now in game experience, you have seven guys that have at least understand game speed. Brian Gaia, Derek Dowry, Angelo Mangiaro, Wendy Loren, Brendan Mann, Andrew Nelson, and now Kevin Rayner. And that, you know, seven guys with game experience, I think gives Herb Hand more to work with in the preseason, because they at least understand that game speed. And Reiner's also versatile, which also, and the fact that Mangiaro's also versatile, gives them some interchangeable parts up front where they can work with in the preseason, some combinations that might be interesting and help them.
It's still not going to be enough, though. It's going to be an improved version of last year.
Doug, I think it's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it, but that's, again, that's why no matter what happens, you know, you talk about turning the corner out of sanctions. In reality, I think that spot's probably still 2016, 2017, where you have the roster really settled and you're able to really overcome some of that, because, you know, let's take schedule-wise. A lot of people have complained about the non-conference schedule this year. Well, the non-conference schedule was put together a couple of years ago when Bill and his guys thought they were going to have 65 scholarships. So they're trying to get some wins on there. Simple as that. When you're recruiting with 65 guys, you have to make certain decisions. And part of the decision he made, which I totally agree with, was let's get as many skilled people as possible, let's be as exciting as possible, and we'll fill in the offensive line, be able to get some scholarships back, which James Franklin's been able to take advantage of, but they're still young. So that's why you have so many, you have dynamic skilled people here, which Penn State does, on both sides of the ball, but why they're still struggling in that part, because that's how it was recruited in a 65-15 scholarship era. So it just takes a couple more years to get there, but they're getting closer all the time.
I see they just signed they just got a commitment from a lineman from Exeter, if you care to say his name.
No.
I know. I know.
The following would have been an NCAA violation.
I know.
Did you ever hear the Jack Ham line about that? It was really good, Doug. We were doing the pregame show outside the Jordan Center, and somebody asked about some guy that they were recruiting at the time. I can't remember which one. And it may have been Hackenberg, I think. And I said, well, we really can't say anything about that because it would be an NCAA violation. And Jack said, what else can they do to us?
That's funny.
I don't believe it's a violation for me to say it's a big win.
I agree with you, Kevin. I think help is on the way.
Help is on the way.
All right.
I can go. I could go with that. Thanks, Doug.
All right. Thanks a lot.
See, Doug, that had to be mentally fulfilling to hear that. All right.
I love that music. Story time with Steve is my favorite part of the show.
I need to come up with more stories.
I was going to say.
I told you I want to hear the Chad Henne, Chris Sims fiasco in detail.
Oh, the Sims thing.
Yeah,
the Sims thing. The Sims thing was, I remember the basketball game he visited, and he showed up with his mom. And the visit went great.
Phil wasn't
was
there,
dad.
Though.
No, and it was Dad that said, no, I don't think we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Dad. Oh, well. Enjoy Thursday Night Football with Dad.
All right. Thank you, guys. Talk
right,
to you later.
Thanks, Doug. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, overall, the Big Ten has done, I think, what it needed to do. I think, you know, when crisis happens, you know, do I think the Big Ten handled the Penn State situation well? No, I don't think they handled the Penn State situation well. Have they handled other things extremely well? They got very, very high marks for me as to how they've handled things over the years with television, how they've handled things with expansion, how they've handled revenue sharing in the conference, starting the Big Ten Network, items such as that, big ticket items, they have handled tremendously well. And I think overall, you can sit there when you're in or you're mad at an entity. And a lot of fans have been mad at the Big Ten because of the bowl situation, the bowl money, and have been mad at how they've handled this situation in the last couple of years. I understand that. But that also doesn't mean, and when that happens, suddenly you start feeling like the grass is greener someplace else. The grass is not greener someplace else. The grass is not greener in the ACC. The ACC right now, there are two conferences right now that are really worth more than any other conference. And that's the SEC and the Big Ten. They're the two conferences. You notice nobody, and the third one would be the Pac-12. You notice nobody leaves there. Nobody has left the Big Ten to go someplace else. Nobody has left the SEC to go someplace else. Nobody's left the Pac-12 to go anyplace else.
No, there's a reason they went to the Pac-12.
All right. I mean, Colorado left the Big 12. Utah left the Mountain West. Missouri left the Big 12. Texas A&M left the Big 12. Maryland left the ACC. these two conferences financially have been the single most stable conferences. Penn State will be able to come out of all of this financially because of its affiliation with the Big Ten. The road in the ACC would be much longer. The competition football-wise would not be... I mean, I look outside of Florida State. How much better is it down in the ACC? Especially now. And let's face it, the Big Ten East with Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. But those are the teams you're going to be seeing every single year. I think Pitt has a great landing spot to be in the ACC. But they've become a middle-of-the-road team there.
If you think you can't afford a new car,
Sunbury Motors Hyundai says you can.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is Central Pennsylvania's volume Hyundai dealer.
We sell volume by making brand new Hyundais more affordable than other import brands.
Listen to this.
A brand new 2016 Hyundai Elantra Value Edition comes with push button start, sunroof, Bluetooth, alloy wheels, and sells for only $17,827
or $218 per month.
You have to hurry because these 29 Elantras will be gone in 2 weeks. All new Hyundais come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. A brand new Elantra with lots of stuff for only $218 per month and comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
And it's not a lease, you own it.
No wonder Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the volume Hyundai dealer in Central PA. Sonatas, Santa Fe, Tucson's, and Velocitors are all priced at volume pricing. Remember, when you think you can't afford a new car, Sunbury Motors Hyundai says
you can.
Hurry into Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
$218 per month for 84 months at 3.89% with 10% down plus tax and tags.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great to have everyone on board today. Tomorrow, Lou Prado, Penn State perspective on 25 years of the Big Ten. John Bacon, Big Ten perspective on 25 years of Penn State, the Big Ten. Plus Jody McDonald tomorrow from CBS Sports. And coming up on Friday, Dick Girardi on the Belmont Stakes. So big guest list the next couple of days. Looking forward to that. Scoreboard, get everybody up to date. The Giants have jumped out to a 1-0 lead top of the fourth at AT&T Park. As they've been able to put one on the board there. The Cardinals have won. They beat Milwaukee 7-4 today. Atlanta leads Arizona 6-1 at the end of two. Mark Teixeira's homered. Yankees lead Seattle 3-1 in the bottom of the fourth at Safeco. Red Sox win the first game of a day-night doubleheader as they beat the Twins today 6-3. Dustin Pedroia had four hits, and Eduardo Rodriguez wins his second straight start after being called up from the minor leagues. The Phillies play tonight when they take on the Cincinnati Reds. They snapped their seven-game losing streak last night. Darren Ruff with a walk-off game-winning hit. Today at the French Open, Rafa Nadal has won 9 French Open championships on the red clay of Roland Garros. Today, on the red clay of Roland Garros, he got destroyed. Novak Djokovic beat him in straight sets today, including 6-1 in the third. Andy Murray won today in 4 sets to advance. And on the women's side, Serena Williams advanced in straight sets at Roland Garros. Stanley Cup final starts tonight. Blackhawks and Tampa Bay. If I had to pick a single player over the last 6 years that to me is the swing player that I would need on my roster to make a deep playoff run, that pick would be Jonathan Toews. I think he is the Mark Messier of this generation, that when the money's on the table, the pressure gets ratcheted up, he plays better, and he makes people around him better. He wins 75% of his faceoffs. He seems to score big goals when they need them. He seems to set up big goals when they absolutely have to have him. I think he has been the swing player of the generation. To me, he's the Mark Messier of this generation. Messier, by the way, won 6 Stanley Cups. 2 without Gretzky. Gretzky won no Stanley Cups without Messier. Now, a different supporting cast. I mean, obviously, Gretzky's the greatest player ever, but still. something to at least think of. NBA Finals tomorrow night. It is Golden State and Cleveland. Best player on the planet, LeBron James, against, I think, the most exciting team on the planet. That's Golden State. They understand the value of the three-point shot. When the Celtics won the NBA championship in 1981, Larry Bird, who was an outstanding three-point shooter, took no more than 3 3-point shots a game at any point during the season. He ended up taking 220-something three-point shots for the season. Steph Curry took 242 three-point shots after the All-Star break. That's knowing the value of the shot, which the NBA has been very slow to embrace. Pat Riley doesn't like it. Greg Popovich doesn't like it, yet Pop's team last year set a finals record for most threes attempted. He says, I understand completely the value. He says, I just still don't like it, but I understand the value of it. And I've always talked about it in this realm. Let's just take simple numbers. If you take 18 shots and you make 9 of them from two-point land, 50%, how many points do you have? 18. If I take 18 three-point shots and I make 6, 33%, I still have 18 points. Thus, 33% of threes is equivalent to 50% of twos. That's the value of the three-point shot. In today's college basketball, I've said repeatedly, you have to have 3 players on the floor at all times that can competently shoot the three-point shot. And if you have a 4th guy, wow. I mean, what was the difference? Kentucky has more talent on it than any team in the NCAA tournament. Why did they lose to Wisconsin? Because what was the one weakness of Kentucky basketball? 3-point shooting. Devin Booker, an excellent 3-point shooter. The Harrisons, not. They're not good 3-point shooters. Look at Wisconsin. Cannon can shoot it. Gosser can shoot it. Kaminsky can shoot it. Decker can shoot it. Oh, and by the way, a guy that took no 3-point attempts a year ago was a 40% 3-point shooter this year and took plenty of them. Nigel Hayes. That's where Wisconsin swung it. They had the 3-point shooters on the floor. They could hit one when they needed one. Kentucky couldn't. Michigan State was able to stay in the game early against Duke by hitting their threes, but Duke has better long-range shooters all the way through than Michigan State does. And that's the difference. Rick Pitino was the first one to really get the 3-point shot rolling in college basketball. They averaged 15 three-point attempts his first year at Providence. They made it. They went to the NIT. They then played an exhibition game against the Soviet national team that included Arvydas Sabonis and Šarūnas Marcelionis. And they fired up 25 threes and clobbered Providence. And Pitino in that night changed the goal. Instead of shooting 15 threes a game, he told his team, we need to shoot 25 a game and 30 if need be. And that year, Providence made the Final Four, known as the PC5. And you know who the top marksman was on that team? Billy Donovan. So the value of the three-point shot that the NBA has been slow to embrace. And Larry Bird was not one that took a lot of, you know, Larry Bird was a marksman as a three-point shooter. Outstanding. But it's not a play he practiced a lot. Pat Riley says that the three is really needed during his tenure, that when you absolutely had to have it. Not as part of the offense. The three-point shot actually originated in the old American Basketball League, which went belly up. When they started the ABA, George Mikan, yes, George Mikan of DePaul, George Mikan, first big man to enter into the NBA, that could had legitimate big man skills. He was the commissioner of the ABA, and he had them put in the three-point shot because he thought it would put people in seats. And Louis Dampier, out of Kentucky, playing for the Kentucky Colonels, was the best marksman in the entire league. Hubie Brown is coaching one day the Colonels in practice, coaching Kentucky. This is practice. Standard 2-on-1 break. Now, in a standard 2-on-1 break, what does everybody do? They take the ball all the way to the bucket. They either take it themselves or at the last second, kick it off in a bounce pass and hit the shot. They're in practice. They came down one day, and Louis Dampier just pulled up from 25 feet, knocked down a three-point shot. Now, this is the late 60s, early 70s. And Hubie Brown stopped practice. Today, that is standard operating procedure because of the value of the shot. The value of the shot is the key to all of this. And Golden State takes better advantage of it than anybody else because they have the best three-point shooter on the planet in Steph Curry. They've got another guy in Klay Thompson who's not bad at all. And by the way, Cleveland has not been hurt by J.R. Smith. Opens up the floor. I think it's just an exciting brand of basketball. I love watching it. Love watching it. That'll start tomorrow night. It's interesting what Dick from Milton brought up yesterday. Didn't you think, Kev? He was talking about the one sport that really has not made any real changes has been soccer.
Yeah, even with the discussion of how there's not enough scoring, and that's not just me saying that. I've heard that from a lot of folks. Even people that like soccer would like to see more scoring.
Right. I mean, the casual fan, that's the part, you know, you're trying to get the casual fan engaged because the diehard's going to be there no matter what. There may be most opposed to then and so on and so forth, but the diehard's always going to be there. You don't lose the diehard. It's the casual fan you're trying to get in there that makes that big difference. Not changed anything over the years. I mean, you know, it's the same field, same line, same offside, same everything, same bribery, everything.
Just not sure how far up it goes.
Oh, I think we're starting to get a feel for that.
Oh, I think yesterday showed how far up it might have gone.
I don't think you resign unless you're worried. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Something very interesting is going to happen on October 25th when the Buffalo Bills take on Jacksonville. The game is going to be streamed online, as well as, of course, being carried on over-the-air television. But Yahoo.com has the streaming rights. It's the first game that's going to be streamed.
Go ahead.
When we've talked about platforms as to what would do with, and remember last week with Jim Delaney, I brought up and I used the word platform. Okay? That's what I was talking about. Streaming. And the Bills-Jags game is going to be the first game that is streamed online.
The thing that I thought was really interesting about this is the game that's in London, so it'll be at 9:30 Eastern time, but it will only be carried on, I believe it's the local CBS affiliate in both cities. It will not be a national broadcast. So the only way you're going to be able to watch this outside of the two teams involved is on Yahoo.
Right. So that's where they're going to do it. I mean, they've committed to trying to do this, and this is a big innovation. Dick and Milton, hi. Dick, how are you today?
Hey, Steve. I just was going to tell you, just to run out of time here, but you know, soccer at the high school, at the college level, comes due here, and they start in the fall, obviously, the same time as football. And I was thinking maybe sometime this summer you could have an interesting show by having maybe your Penn State soccer coach or Bucknell's or somebody local, maybe a couple of them on to talk about soccer in general, because they're all professional fans, obviously, other than their college teams. Maybe they could actually shed more light on what they think maybe could change soccer a little bit. so to be more fans. I mean, I know there's a lot of fan fans, so don't miss.
We've had Bob Worming on the show before, and Bob will always come on, so that's an easy one to do. In fact, Penn State today, Andrew Wolverton, the Penn State goalkeeper, who had a great senior season, just signed his contract with the LA Galaxy, the MLS, today. So he's with the defending MLS champions.
But I don't know that you ever approach it on the angle, like with all these other changes that are proposed changes in some of the sports, if they actually ever talk about their sport. And maybe they're satisfied the way it is. Maybe they all are. I don't even know that. I'm just saying that maybe they, you know, I mean, the only thing that would ever speed soccer up, obviously, or make it change a little bit is indoor soccer, like almost like arena soccer.
Which they've done. It's interesting. The women's game is different stylistically than the men's game, Dick. The women's game, they'll take three strikers and throw them toward the net. Men's game is a little more cautious. They like to send one. It's more of a midfield game. Women's game's a lot more wide open, thus you do see more scoring.
Yeah, I just find soccer to be, you know, look, I go to some soccer games, I go to some college games locally because I know the kids. And it wouldn't be my first choice of all the sports to go watch because it's slow compared to let's say lacrosse or, you know, even slower than volleyball to me, and that's a different game altogether, obviously too. But it's just of all the sports that are out there, it just is a lot of running. It's kind of like cross country with a ball in a sense to me, almost. But that's just my take on it. You know, I don't say they play some defense. I understand that, but it's just not the same. Not just the same as lacrosse or some of the other sports that might. I don't consider soccer a minor sport. I don't consider any of them minor anymore. But they could change it. They could change some rules. You know, maybe they don't want to. Maybe they're happy with the way it is. Soccer is an old game, and maybe they're just happy playing it the way it's been played forever. But obviously there's a reason they're trying to make other games change. It just is. I mean, I'm not sure all the time if it's just for their own doing or for the fans or why they do it. Obviously, baseball's not doing it to interject more scoring into a game, or, you know, football's changing. I'm not sure I like the changes, tweaking with the extra point. I just think that could get carried away too far. That's me. I see no problem with field goals.
Well, the one area with the extra point I do like is they've made it a play the defense can score on. Now, that part I agree with.
I suppose, yeah. That's probably okay. I really haven't given a lot of thought. I have no problem with football the way it is. You know, it's a timed event. It's not like baseball. Every sport's timed in a sense, except baseball's the only sport that I know. It's not really time-timed. Obviously they could speed baseball up. Maybe they don't want to. I have no idea what their goals are with any of them. I just thought, you have the rest of the summer. Maybe you could have a show or so, or get these guys to maybe they'll be happy with just the way it is and say, geez, we really don't want a lot of changes. You know, I think it's a good idea on your part.
I think it's a good idea.
We don't want it to change. Yeah. Anyhow, that's for today. See you. Thanks.
Thanks, Dick. That's a good idea. I like that. Yeah. As for fly fishing and trout, I'll be honest with you.
That's really my wheelhouse there.
As to whether or not the fish wants to any part of what's going on.
You know, I talked this weekend to a friend of my son's who she plays soccer at multiple levels, actually high school now, as well as club soccer, and does an awful lot of traveling, sometimes out of state. And I said, from your perspective as somebody that plays soccer, what's missing? Why isn't it that soccer doesn't become as popular in the United States as it does anywhere else? And her answer was exactly what we've been talking about. It's the low-scoring games. And I said, okay, how do you fix that and not lose the integrity of the game? And her answer was offside. That is the
I've
most.
I've talked about that how many times?
And
how many
that's what's funny. That? And that's what's funny. You've said that as well. And that was her first thing: is offsides is over the thing that drives me crazy, because she said I have this opportunity, and then I turn around, and there's the whistle.
Right. I think that if I had to pick one area where soccer is where they need to change the game, I don't think you should be allowed to stand and cherry pick behind the defense. All right. But I do think that if you can get past them on the run before the, to me, that's, there's so many great opportunities where the crowd goes, well, it's offside, and everybody just sits down.
Yep, that was her first thing. I thought that was interesting.
So, I've said that forever. I think they need to change the offside rule. I don't think you should be able to stand down and just cherry pick and just wait for the ball. But at the same time, Tony and Shamokin.
Curling. Increase the number of sweepers.
This is now we're in Kevin's wheelhouse, right, because he would be a great sweeper.
Yeah, see, I think you need to increase the number of sweepers and then have to have an automatic defensive play.
By the way, Tony. Tony, what's interesting about that is I brought that up to Kevin's wife, and she said the next time he sweeps will be the first time he sweeps.
And she'd be right.
No Olympics for Kevin.
That's exactly right.
Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, I think they need some sort of a defensive play. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but you have to involve a little more defense than waiting for it to get on the button, and then all of a sudden the other team comes up to sweep it along the off the button a little further. It has to be some sort of other defense you can use.
How about mines?
I see that being a slight problem as damage, maybe to... as maybe damage to the ice itself. I'm not sure that would work.
What's going on with the curling thing? Well, they plant. Each team's allowed to plant two mines. That's what I'm telling you. The America's Cup. Hey, you stand on the shore, you don't see anything. All right. Now they're going around buoys. I mean, you want to make it a sport that Americans will love? Arm the boats. Let them duel it out in the bay. It's obvious who wins.
Raise the Jolly Roger.
Hey, come on. Now that's a sport.